Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Carly Lloyd? Good to have you with us.
Good to be here with you all.
We're all just sitting around talking about how old we all feel. Everyone was complaining about their hips, their this, their that. How are you feeling?
Well, if you see me changing position multiple times, that's because my one hip might be a little bit tight, and Mo's whole body is tight over there.
Everything. This is the most uncomfortable. I feel like this makes me look more professional. So just so you know, I go through pain for the sake of this show. I go through pain sitting like this for the sake of this show, all right?
There we go.
This is not comfortable
at all. He doesn't go through pain a lot. He's hardly ever here, so.
Hey, thanks for making an appearance today.
They told me you would come in, so I said, all right, clearing my schedule, I will be here.
Appreciate that.
Well, team
player. How long have you been retired now? Is it like, it's nearly 2 years.
Yeah,
is that right?
two years in November.
How fit are you still?
I mean, we were kicking it. We played
about.
Probably 4 or 5 times over in Australia at the Women's World Cup.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was...
And you feel good out there?
Feel pretty good.
You do?
Yeah, maybe to not Heather O'Reilly's level because she's pretty psychotic still, but I feel all right.
She's still training for her Ninja Warrior.
The sprint gears, maybe not so much.
So what is it now? We're a couple of months removed from the World Cup, right? Obviously, that's a huge talking point, especially for you. You were there. You were with Fox. How would you look back on your experience?
I would say it was an amazing experience. I think it was something that, like you all know, I was trying to talk myself out of, I think, getting into the TV space, maybe because I didn't think I'd be necessarily good or I would like it or I'd want to do it. But, you know, Fox and my agent were pushing kind of to get me to the Men's World Cup. Went and worked 8 days, felt like I worked, you know, 20 at that point. TV is different. It's different than on the field. That's a different grind. But really glad that I had that experience because then I just felt so much more comfortable going to the Women's World Cup. And it was great. I mean, it was an amazing World Cup from... just an on-the-field performance by all teams, really exciting. And then, you know, what I do best is I'm just myself, and I think that that's what I brought. I'm not somebody that's just going to kind of give fluff. I'm going to give my honest assessment. And, you know, I was enjoying being able to do that.
I feel like for Clint, there's almost like a parallel, right? Because you weren't sure about doing media. And I think for you, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think it was like a lack of trust almost, like, these guys haven't always represented me well. I don't know if I want to be team media. Did you feel like that to some extent?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, I think that's probably why we maybe, you know, get along a bit. But I feel like there's similar parallels. Like, we played with a chip on our shoulder a bit. You know, I came into the U.S. soccer scene. I wasn't somebody that was necessarily being groomed to be the star of the team. Nor do I think U.S. Soccer really wanted me to be the star of the team. I think that they pretty much probably wanted to see others rise. But I was just so unconventional in what I did. You know, I brought my authentic self from start to finish. I was, you know, did it in my way. I was unconventional in the way I trained and the way I approached my career, the way I took care of myself. I did things differently. I did fitness differently. So I did everything different from the team, but, you know, I wanted to win. That's why I was there.
When you say you don't think U.S. Soccer wanted you to be the star...
Wait, can I just clarify? Who do we mean when we say U.S. Soccer? Like, we mean...
It's a federation, the head coach. But either way, when did it click for you that you feel that's how you feel?
I mean, I felt slighted and everything. I mean, I didn't have a, I wasn't with the agency that was sort of coupled with U.S. Soccer, where a majority of the players played with that, you know, had those agents representing them.
That matches?
Of course. Deals, sponsorships, every bit of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I just think, you know, U.S. Soccer, they like people that maybe just conform to the way that they want someone to represent them.
And what does that mean? What is that way that they want to be represented? Didn't you fit that?
Like a bit of a puppet, I guess you could say. You know, somebody that just comes and goes about their business. And so they essentially, I feel like they groom players coming in to be the stars. And then when someone else comes in, it's, you know, it's sort of a resistance of what can we do? Can we not publicize this player as much or give them enough attention? I mean, I felt like that throughout my entire career. Like, it was so hard, you know, for 10 years of my career, no sponsorships, like barely anything, no opportunities, grinding away, you know, figuring out what do I have to do to have the world understand what I'm about or see the type of player I am. And I mean, I had to score a hat trick in a World Cup final. You know, people are like, oh, where'd this player come from? I'm like, I've been there for 10 years. I've been scoring game-winning goals in, you know, Algarve Cups and Olympics and all this stuff. But that's just the way the world works as far as showcasing players. You know, they're not always highlighting the best players. They're oftentimes highlighting the most marketable players to sell jerseys, to sell this, to sell that. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, I mean, I deal with what she's saying 100%. I felt like I wasn't part of the Bradenton Academy, so you can't show, like, look, this is a product that we're creating, and these are the players that should be. I'm the person that fell through the cracks, shouldn't have made it, you know, still was going the college route because that's all I knew. And then the way that I played, the way that I acted, I wasn't like your poster child of who they wanted to be, the main guy. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, similar to Carly, all I wanted to do was win, be the best that I could, have the longest career as I could have, make the most money that I could to take care of my family. And that's how I felt. I felt I was not the person ever that they really wanted to be the main guy or the main person.
But you taking that approach, like you deciding I want to do things my way, was that more so a reaction to all that, or is that stuff that you were already doing? This was already like who you are, you train your way, you do things your way, and then it just kind of worked? Or was it more reactionary to now being a part of U.S. Soccer and being a part of the national team and seeing that environment and saying, okay, well, that doesn't really fit me, I'm going to do it this way?
No, I came in straight away. Like, I experimented. You know, I lifted weights, but then I started to feel slow and sluggish, and so then I stopped doing that and kind of explained to the sports science people that, hey, lifting weights doesn't make me feel great. I'm going to focus more on body weight stuff. But it was always deemed as me trying to be difficult and me wanting to do my own thing. So it turned into this thing where there was no margin of error for me in my career at all. Like, some other players got a long leash of, they could go in a goal-scoring drought for X amount of weeks and it not be a problem. For me, if I was going to do it my way and do it the unconventional way and do things differently, I couldn't mess up. I couldn't slip up at all.
I guess what's weird for me is that from the outside looking in, I've just always considered you one of the faces of U.S. soccer, right? And so to hear that you didn't feel like you were chosen by them to represent you, did that change at a point when you're leading them to wins in a Women's World Cup? Does that switch, or did you continue to feel that way the rest of your career?
I think I forced it. When I first got on the team, I mean, I scored the winning goal in 2008 Olympic final, scored the winning goal in 2012 Olympic final, the only two goals in that final. But after that, all you ever heard of were everybody else aside from me. Several other, you know, key players. You'd see billboards, you'd see interviews, sponsorship, like none of that was going to me. So then we get to 2015 and, you know, we won that World Cup because of some yellow card suspensions. That was the only reason I was pushed into a more of attacking role. had the freedom to play the way that I play. And I scored 3 goals in a World Cup final. And so I forced them. Like, I went against everything that, I think that they essentially, you know, were having all these other stars. I mean, they groom stars and they build stars before they're even born. That's just what they do. I mean, they're doing it now, you know. Pulisic, you know, the poor guy's playing with so much pressure because he's being thrown into this as, like, having to be the face of U.S. soccer. Mallory Swanson, you know, she was the next big thing coming in, and it's all this pressure, it's all this attention. But, you know, I look back and I'm thankful because having that, like having to prove myself, having to have that chip on my shoulder, and the media, the fans, it allowed me to have the career that I had.
Do you have, looking back now that you've had a chance to kind of like step away from it, look at your career and then look at the current state of like U.S. soccer and everything from a different perspective and standpoint, you have any regrets about anything?
No, I don't really have any regrets. I don't have any regrets of how I approach my career. I took the long game approach, and it was the most rewarding way to navigate through my career, because the day that I walked off that field representing the U.S. national team, it was the greatest feeling in the world, because I stuck it to everybody. Like, nobody thought that I was going to do what I did. I didn't even think I was going to do what I did. But, you know, everybody that was rooting against me, everybody that wanted to see me fail, I had the last laugh.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Did you have a teammate that you could kind of confide in?
I mean, there were some. Like, I didn't let my guard down much. I couldn't. Because I couldn't trust anybody. That's the reality of it. I mean, everybody looks at the U.S. Women's National Team and they think, 23 best friends, everybody gets along. No. It's the most dysfunctional group of players, but the most unbelievable environment to ever be in.
Because How's that
you,
work, though?
Because you win.
Dysfunctional in what way?
It's unhealthy. It's the, you know, the grinding, the having to compete for spots, the who's getting deals, and, you know, what person's on a commercial this week and next. I mean, it's human nature.
Do you all relate to that, though? Is that how it felt for you guys on a national team level?
I was going to ask, because I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, because of, I don't know, if we take it back to, like, when we were playing, the bulk share of our salaries are coming from our club teams, right? And so national team is just kind of like, more so, it's the fact that you're part of the national team, and then whatever pay comes from that, it's not life-changing money in regard to comparison to what our club salaries were. So I'm just curious, is the dynamic different from that standpoint? Because the national team, those are gonna be like kind of the highest paid players from the women's side. And so you guys are competing for endorsements, which would be a good chunk of money coming in. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And is that accurate as well?
Totally, yeah. I mean, because that was pretty much our livelihood, our salaries. I mean, we essentially, with the NWSL for so many years, U.S. Soccer paid our salaries, you know, in our U.S. Soccer checks as a separate, you know, check coming in to play in the NWSL. So
yeah, everybody had to negotiate their own salary within the national team, or did everybody make the same?
The way we had it structured back in the day, there were a couple different tiers. Whatever tier the coach ended up, you know, putting you in, tier one, tier two, or, you know, then it got a little strange as well, because it's like then you've got some tier two players that perhaps end up making a World Cup squad or an Olympic squad. It was, you know, it's cutthroat.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's life in itself. But, yeah, it was, look, I couldn't let my guard down. I couldn't trust people, whether that was the right approach or not. I was there to win. I wasn't there to be liked. I was there to be respected, to earn the respect of other players. And that's all I cared about. I didn't kiss ass to anybody. I didn't kiss ass to the PR guy, to the coaches, to anybody. No, I treated everybody with respect, whether you were the CEO of U.S. Soccer or whether you were the equipment manager. And that's all that I did. I wanted to treat people the way that I wanted to be treated. It's dysfunctional in a sense of you've got human nature. You've got a whole group of women that are trying to make rosters.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know you very well, right? But the little that I do know you, I think you're super direct, and I really respect that about you. So if you don't have an agent and you don't feel comfortable with the way you're being treated and brought through the ranks within U.S. soccer, are you having those conversations directly with somebody? Hey, why aren't I being put forward for sponsorship deals? Why aren't I getting promoted?
Oh, I had several.
How did
straight to the source, straight to the PR person, straight to the head PR person. We're playing a game in Philadelphia. It's kind of, you know,
it's
not New Jersey, but it's home.
Yeah.
Not one banner down the streets in Philly. There was a banner of somebody else, Julie Ertz, which I love Julie Ertz. Her husband, you know, at the time was playing for the Philadelphia Eagles. How do you not have, and this was towards the end of my career, how do you not have my picture up anywhere? So, oh yeah, I had several conversations.
And what kind of responses would you get?
Oh yeah, you know, we get it, you know. It just fell on deaf ears. I mean, it was just the same stuff over and over again. They picked several players that they wanted to market, that they wanted to highlight, and that's what always happened. So it was like, all right, every time I go out on the field, like, I'm going to have to show you. It was a constant battle. And this was dating back to, you know, post-2012, where I actually felt like I had a right, because of what I did on the field, to say, hey, come on. How am I not in the top five mix of players here? I mean, you look at Michelle Akers, you know, she was a force to be reckoned with. Was she the most marketed, most popular player back in the day?
Not at all.
No. Now she is. Now she is because people realize how good of a player she was. But in the moment, you know, they weren't marketing her. They weren't putting her on posters and commercials and all of that.
Did you ever have a conversation with her?
No, I never did. No. But I think she gets it. I think she's seen it. How can you not?
As a woman, do you think that we're treated differently in that kind of scenario? Is it about, hey, this physical look appeals to X, Y, Z, so this is someone we're really going to push in a way that I feel like men don't necessarily, and like they don't come across that kind of dynamic in the same way?
I do, yeah, I do. And that was sort of, you talk about, you know, my mindset kind of going into my career. I wanted to be respected for what I did on the field. Not for, you know, posing for a magazine or swimsuit edition, like none of that. Like I didn't want to even entertain that because I didn't want anything to be, you know, I didn't want any bias towards who I was as a player. And so I built my brand with how I wanted to be portrayed and to be seen. And so I didn't wear makeup when I was playing. Turned down Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, Mo wasn't turning that down, I'll tell you that right now.
Which one? Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
It's crazy to me, though, because, like, with that being said, right, like, after you have that success, after whether it's the Olympic success or World Cup success, how does that not, like, from their standpoint and their mindset, how does that not just now put you at the forefront? How are you not the one who's going to sell the most jerseys? You know what I mean? Like,
because I didn't fit their mold. I did everything different, everything from the agent, from my fitness, wanting to do more fitness and actually getting in trouble because I wanted to do more fitness. I mean, I just did everything different, and I think that it wasn't their mold. Like, it just never felt good enough. Like, nothing ever felt good enough. And, you know, and leaving, I think they all realize. But at the time, when I'm trying to earn a living and, you know, when I'm trying to give my all to the team and win and be the best that I possibly can be, then to not really have the support of a federation that you're playing for, to not really feel like you're really respected in that manner, it's pretty shitty.
So does that concern you for a future generation coming through, if there's another like Carly Lloyd out there who does think differently or who doesn't fit the mold but is just as gifted, just as talented? Is she going to find it difficult to break through still?
Perhaps, but I think there's so much fundamentally wrong that that's a whole nother episode.
Okay, let's start. Well, what's wrong?
I mean, everybody, you know, I think everybody's kind of on this, it's okay, you know, we'll bring in a new coach that ticks the boxes, we'll tactically play a lot better because they'll come in, we'll technically be better, you know, we want to possess the ball. I don't care what boxes you tick. There's no development at the youth stage. It's all about winning. You've got clubs that are in conflict, you know, with one another, and it's all political, and it's you know, who's all in ECNL and who's not, and what's fair, what's not. So you've got no players that you're developing up the ranks. And then you look at the youth national teams, they have been failing all of these years while the senior team has been winning, so everybody's turned a blind eye to that. And now, where are the players coming from? They're coming from all the way up. And I just look at this team and the champion mentality that we've had throughout the years since the inception of this team, that dog mentality, you've got none of that. The character, the respect, you know, technically, tactically, you could be great and have a coach that comes in, but if you don't have all those other things, there's no winning that's going on. And I think what we've seen with players, and you guys probably see it with the generation of players, it's different, right? Like, we had that dog mentality in us where maybe coaches didn't have to coach that or motivate the players. Now, they don't have that. I look at the U.S. Women's National Team. I mean, Julie Ertz just left, but aside from her, I don't see one player that has that mindset.
And who do you think that falls on, though? Like, not the youth development, because I think that's a bigger and broader kind of responsibility, but, like, the individual players and that dog mentality as a collective amongst that team. Because I know when I came into the national team, right, I came in, there was about 6 or 7 of us that came into our first camp, and there was only, like, maybe 1 or 2 spots that weren't in ink, right? So our mentality was, like, we got to scrap, we got to scrape, we got to fight to earn the respect of all those players that we're coming into the team with, but more than that, to even get on the pitch. So I feel like I came into an environment where the senior players straight away, they welcomed us, they invited us in, but they challenged us, they checked us, they kept us in line, right? So do you feel like the responsibility falls on the players who are helping to bring in these younger players, or should these players be coming in with that characteristic on their own?
I think now, it's just different. That era is different. I think that it's now falls more on the coach.
I agree with that.
You know, like U.S. Soccer's, they've kind of gone about this the wrong way. I mean, Vlatko Andonovski was nice guy, really nice guy. Just because you're nice doesn't mean you're going to win championships, though. You've got to make hard decisions. You know, I look at the Olympics, my last Olympics. You know, we had line changes up top, because he couldn't choose all 6 veteran players of the 3 that he wanted out there at all times. So what do? We just, I play one game, Alex plays the next game. I play another, Alex. You can't do that. Like, you've got to be tough. You've got to be direct. You've got to tell people what they need to hear. And they may not like it, but I think the whole mindset needs to be different. You almost need a Deion Sanders to come in and literally motivate the group, make the group feel really uneasy that none of them are safe and that any moment their spot could just be gone in a second. And you've got to get them just totally thinking a different way, but I think it's different.
I like that. I agree with that. I think it's important that you have a culture within a team as a coach that everybody, you have to play your way into the games, right? How you practice, you have to earn your spot to be a starter. You don't just come in and you automatically start, right? I think it's important. And it's a little bit more difficult on the national team level because everybody's with their club teams when they come in. But for sure on the club level, like if you have a culture where you have to like fight every week to get into that starting lineup, that gets everybody bought in and you have more of that dog mentality. But like you said, being able to make those tough decisions when your back's against the wall and be able to not, it's not about favorites, about who's going to win the game for you.
The reason why I ask if it like falls on the players is because I do agree. I do think the coach plays an incredible role in all that because a coach helps to set the culture. But with that being said, the coach changes a lot more frequently, right? So when I look back at like our playing days, every time you played against the U.S., you got to fight like hell. You got to scrap. We're going to be hard to beat first and foremost. And I think that was kind of a reflection of the veteran players. I think when the torch got passed from one generation to the next, the players that came in, they inherited that straight away. They took on that responsibility of being like, whether it's big brother, but then also being like father of a household where you got to discipline these young players, make sure they know they're not walking in and it's not going to be a cakewalk for them. So that's why I was asking, do you think there was more responsibility or there should be more responsibility on some of these veteran players to hold people accountable and shape the culture?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I first came onto the team and I had Mia Hamm screaming at me because I didn't play the ball to her proper foot. Brianna Scurry in goal because I didn't track back in a 5v5 game. Like, it has to be hard. And I think all these players, you know, want to come in and want to feel comfortable, want to be able to express themselves. No, it doesn't work like that. Just do your job, come in, put the work in. But, I mean, you know, you've got the Federation setting their temperatures in their hotel rooms.
Wait,
at this
what?
Last World Cup. Like, come on.
Would you ever be interested in coaching?
No.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Do you care about the way that the current generation that maybe listened to this or listened to you at the World Cup, do you care about the way that they feel when they hear you kind of making some of these statements? That this current generation lacks X, Y, Z. There is not one player that you see on the roster that has that dog.
No, I mean, Lindsey Horan displays that, but there's not many of them that can, there's not, I mean, we had a plethora of them on our
team. But does it bother you how people feel when they hear that? Or are you just?
No, I don't really care.
No?
No.
Okay.
Because I lived and breathed it. Like,
right.
I feel comfortable and confident to be able to sit here, to be able to be on TV and say what I said because I walk the walk. I did it every single day from start to finish for 17 years straight. Whether I was a starter or whether I was, you know, at one point in 2019 World Cup for a period of 3 years, I was a sub. So it didn't matter. I thought that was my obligation from the previous generation of players to continue to pass that down.
So how did you then feel about the public reaction? Because you became one of the biggest storylines. Like, that was international news. I know in the UK that was reported on, like, the comments that you made surrounding the Women's World Cup and the US Women's National Team specifically in the subpar performance, right? Celebrating after a result that you felt they had no right to be celebrating after. How did you feel about the public response to you personally? Who said it was, you know, it was politically or personally motivated, et cetera.
Yeah, I know my husband was like, wow, you've really made some news over here. I'm like, it's still going, huh? You know? I mean, I, you know, obviously heard the rumblings and whatnot, but he said it was a, you know, pretty big news story over here in the U.S. It's no different than, I guess, how people and what people have said throughout my career. I mean, people think that they know me. People think that, you know, They knew who I am. They know what I represent. They know my beliefs. They know my opinions, all these things. And they really don't know, probably not even 10% of who I truly am. Because as my career, as it played in my career, like I said, I didn't let my guard down. It was tunnel vision, focus. I didn't let the world really see anything other than that. And I didn't really let my teammates see anything other than that. But when I came home with my support system and family, friends, husband, that's me. You know, they know who I am. So all of these things that people are going to say, I mean, did they win? No, they didn't. I knew they weren't going to win. And it's not because I don't want them to win. I saw the trajectory of where the team was going, and I know what it takes to win. And so when people were asking me right after I retired, as the World Cup's leading up, is this team going to win? I don't think so. So it wasn't anything different. And, you know, I've been obviously following Deion Sanders, big fan. I don't watch college football, but I'm now tuning in. You know, and they're giving him shit about the sunglasses, the hat, all these things. He didn't just start doing that. That's been him. But with the U.S. Women's National Team, they did just start doing that. That was not the culture of the team to rock up to a game, put your sunglasses on, dance out on the field before a game.
Is it a youth culture, though?
Yeah, I think so. But that's the coach's job, and that's the leadership's job to. If I saw that, if I was a part of that team, I would raise hell, and I would go directly to the people, players, and tell them to take their sunglasses off. And stop dancing.
What was the commercial that was before the World Cup? Like the world is gonna. Like fear the U.S. women's team? Was that a commercial?
The U.S. versus it was Fox's, I think. U.S. Oh, okay. Versus the world, right? Maybe.
And they had the rest of the world was in yeah. fear.
And you know,
USA.
And teams see that. And they're like, nah, that gives them extra motivation, and that's fine. We always had a target on our backs, but we could always back it up. We always brought it, and yeah, it was when I reacted in the moment. You guys know you're sitting at the desk. The TVs are down there. I was looking at this in real time, and I was appalled. Like, this wasn't a production meeting of, hey, what's your reaction going to be if you... That it was live. Like, and it came from my heart, because I poured my heart and soul out onto that team for so many years, and you just look at some players, and you just think that they're just taking every moment for granted. I mean, you, Charlie, your accident, you know, back in the... Like, It's an honor to represent the crest, mm-hmm. you know, and you would have done anything you could to be back in that moment.
I did everything I could to try and get back, and just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
But that was something where I'm like, I want people to know that when you have these opportunities, to cherish them and to make the most of it, because I'm one example of someone who felt like had the world at my feet, and that bad decision of you know, going out that night cost me my U.S. Men's National Team career.
Yeah.
And I'm never getting back, no matter how much I tried. And so I'm always telling, you know, any player I talk to, please give it your all, because mm-hmm. you may not get another chance.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And I know there's so many things you can't control. You guys have been a part of it. I mean, so many coaches that I played for where I'm like, I don't agree with what you're doing, but like, you just have to sacrifice, and you just have to do it. And you hear all the commentators talking about, oh, you know, Carly Lloyd can't put a ball in the back of the net. But little do they know that there's so much going on behind the scenes that is not maybe allowing me to play freely, or I'm not, you know, feeling confident, whatnot. I get that. So I get that it wasn't just an all players thing. Like, I get that the coaching was not good enough. The tactical flexibility, you know, the team's technical ability, all of that. But the thing you can control is your actions and what you bring. And it was just, it was hard to see.
You know how you said, what I said on the Fox broadcast, I said that came from like my heart because of my personal investment, right? You strike me as a like, I said what I said type person. But there did almost seem like a moment where you retracted to some extent. Were you asked to apologize?
No, definitely not asked to apologize. I think, you know, the next morning coming in for production meetings, it's like, okay, I went real hard and I don't want people to think that I don't care.
It's because you care so much.
Yeah.
That's why you got upset and were passionate about
exactly.
it, because you want them to win.
Yeah. So I didn't, I don't want to come in the next day and be talking about the situation and beating a dead horse again. It's like I said what I said, and I wanted people to understand that this is coming from a place of care. I mean, and everything that I said on air, I said to the team. I got up and spoke the night before my last game playing with the national team. They presented me with gifts. Everybody was in the room, players, coaches, support staff, everybody. And I talked about never taking anything for granted. You know, you've got to work for everything that you get. That's the mentality, that's the DNA of this team. So it was nothing that I hadn't already said to the team, but everyone's like, oh, she apologized, she bent the knee. I'm like, I didn't apologize. I just simply reiterated that I've poured my heart and soul into this team and I care.
Do you think, I think because you care so much and then also because you're close to this team, you played with a lot of these players, you know these players, you know what they do well, what they don't do well, their habits on and off the pitch. I think, does it partially come from that as well, right? That reaction in the moment is maybe things that you saw hints of when you were playing still that were leading up to this moment, and now you've seen that it has manifested in a negative way, in a way that you hoped wouldn't happen. Is that kind of what was also feeling that?
Yeah, I mean, it was 2020 Olympics. It was a disaster. I mean, we were facing crisis control after we lost to Canada, and then we're going in and playing in the bronze medal game against Australia. We didn't talk tactics after that game. We talked what's going on, what's the problem with coaches, and then we talked as a team. And I hadn't said anything all tournament long. And finally, I just
erupted.
Went off. Said to people, your Gucci shoes, your house, your cars, none of that comes unless you win on the field. So when you're brand becomes bigger than the wanting to win, that's a problem.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
So, as a fan and a viewer, kind of watching the build-up to the Women's World Cup, I thought America were one of the favorites. Maybe that's just an assumption based off winning pedigree. Right, but given that winning pedigree of the U.S., you really thought that there was no chance that this team could go ahead and win the Women's World Cup?
No. No, I think that, yes, they're talented, but are they really that talented? That's the question. I mean, I looked at other teams, other players, Linda Caicedo, Colombia, Lauren James, England. I mean, the stuff that they're doing on the ball.
I said it as a baller.
It doesn't really compare to the players. And I think that's going to be the tricky thing with U.S. soccer is we used to be, fit. We used to be mentally tough. Tactically, technically, okay. But now you have nothing. You have none of those traits. Like, the team's not fit. They don't train hard. They were not training hard towards the end of my career. They're all on limited minutes. They're all needing to be rested. They're all not allowed to take, 10 extra reps of shooting. And I was able to do what I needed to do because I had proven myself. And I'm like, I'm going to go do extra, and you're not going to tell me otherwise.
The coaches are saying you can't do extra, or who's saying this?
Trainer?
Coaches, sports science. I had to get Vlatko's blessing to. When he first came onto the team, I said to him, hey, I'm just letting you know, I used to have to sneak out to go do extra running. I'm just coming to you now.
Can you say that again? Because I don't think that... I got bad hearing, so I don't know if I heard that.
I had to sneak out of my hotel room, go to a city, Google, find a patch of grass, and go do some running. And I said to him, instead of me sneaking out, I'm just being honest with you, that I may need to do extra stuff.
What type of extra running are you doing?
Little sprints, just to get me topped off, just to get my body, my mind, like I knew what I needed to do. And, you know, Jill had a problem with it. Our sports performance people had a problem with it. Blacko's like, oh, okay, well, it seemed to work for you now. You just go do it.
He's not going to argue.
It's a nice guy.
As teammates, though, like, when there's that one, like, a Ronaldo type or a Carly Lloyd type, right? And are you looking at them thinking, man, you're making us look bad?
Could you stop?
No. Like, man, stop scoring goals. Damn. I mean, do what you got to do to get ready.
That's how you feel.
That's how I always felt. You know what I mean? And then when it comes to gym stuff, I don't think everybody does the same thing. I think based upon your body and, you know, if you do a function movement at screen, see what you're lacking, to whether it's hip rotation or whether it's, you know, the history of hamstrings, RDL, glute activation. Like, everybody's going to have their own thing that they need to do to be ready so that they can perform at a high level. I don't think everybody's ever going to be the same in terms of what they do.
Did you feel like that was accepted on the men's side?
No, I think that everybody kind of had their own thing to a certain degree, you know what I mean? Depending on what they needed with the team. I mean, mostly it's with the club team that you're working on that stuff because it's year-round, week in and week out. With the national team, the only time you truly get to, like, feel like you're together and work on stuff is before major competitions, because you're having send-off games, you're building up to, you know, the long tournament where you have to get out of the group stage so you actually can work on more stuff. But for me, it was more, what are you doing in the off-season, pre-season with your club team that's going to get you ready for injury prevention throughout the year?
And I get that. Like, the men's schedule is a little different, but, like, do you guys feel like you are being controlled with, like, what you did?
I mean, I didn't feel like that way. And to be honest, just going off of what Clint was saying there and kind of to your question, or I think your question about how did it feel, was there kind of a
Whose question
reaction?
Do you want to answer?
Huh? I'm going to answer them both. That's what I do. I can multitask. No, but I, for me, with the national team, like Clint said, a lot of it is with your club team. That's where your kind of regimen is set, what you do on a day-to-day basis. But, like, simple things like, when I first came into the team and I talked about how the older players set the tone. So, okay, I finished training. In my mind, I think, like, all right, whatever, maybe I need to go do X, Y, and Z. If I see a player who's playing in my position doing something different, well, then my reaction is, all right, well, tomorrow when I'm coming back out, training finishes, I want to do what he's doing. He's playing. I'm coming into the team. I'm a young player. I'm new to this. I'm trying to learn the ropes. I'm trying to establish myself. I want to be having maybe not the same career path as him, but I want to be playing for the national team. So if he's doing this and that's giving him maybe a slight edge, or that's getting him that little bit of separation from where he's at currently to where he wants to be, I'm not taking it as like a slight, or I'm not looking at that person in envy. I'm looking at them as motivation.
They're setting the bar for me.
That's admiration. I'm like, all right, so this is what it takes to be a consistent player, a regular on the national team. This is what it takes to be someone who is achieving higher heights.
I had a captain in club who just said, because we, you know how we joked about me needing 20 chances to score one goal.
We joked.
The club captain, my first year as a professional, he pulled me aside and said, after every training, you need to set aside 50 balls in a 6-yard box, an 18-yard box, and just ping the far corner, both feet. Do it for 30 minutes after every practice. And I was like, damn, all right. So every practice after 30 minutes, just finishing by myself, bag of balls. And that set the tone for me for the rest of my career.
But you weren't being told by a sports performance person that you could only hit 5 reps.
No.
That's the part that's crazy to me.
That's what's going on. Like,
I think the only time that I ever remember them saying, like, hey, we got to shut it down, is if maybe it was a longer training. And it was an intense training where
we had 2 games in a week.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That there's a difference there. But to your point, Carly, I think if you just do everything that everybody else is doing, there's no separation you're getting from them, right? Whether it's mentally, physically, like, I remember growing up, you know, in Nacogdoches, I'd go running. I'd say, who else is out running around the world right now? Like, just to give you that mental edge. Like, you're always, but if you just seriously, if you just went to training with your club team and did exactly what everybody else did, and then you just came back, you're really not doing anything that's separating yourself.
What's gonna make you great?
Whether it could be the simplest things, staying and doing a little bit more shooting, doing a little bit more fitness, go in the gym, do a little bit more strength and conditioning. But if you're doing those little things extra, that gives you that edge when you look in the mirror that you're not nervous, you're ready. You know you've done what you needed to do for the game.
But then it's also just knowing yourself.
Yeah.
Like you just said, you experimented early on. You tried weightlifting. You tried doing these different things. It wasn't as if you said, I'm so stubborn, I don't want to do this. It's like, I tried this. That doesn't help me get to my optimal level. That doesn't challenge me in the way that I need to be challenged to reach the goals that I've set for myself. And so you found what does work for you. So I don't see anything wrong with
that.
Unless
it's more sometimes. Like, you know, we have opportunities with the team, you know, the cryo, the ice baths. You have all these recovery methods that they provide, which is great. There's no point in doing all 1,000 of them.
Quality over quantity.
Like I picked my couple of things, ice baths, massages, and I consistently just stuck with them and then consistently stuck with the training bits. But I haven't met one player that has reached the top that decided, you know, I don't need to do that many reps. It's just, it just doesn't work like that. So it's, you know, and on the youth levels, youth national teams, you know, coaches are, let's rest our best players to save them. I'm like, these players are 17, 16, 17 years old. Rest? They don't need rest. It's just, it's a plethora of things.
When we're talking about U.S. soccer, Clint needs to go to the bathroom.
Bro, we've been there for an hour.
Oh,
dude.
My.
I'm like, hey, man, I'm hydrated, all right?
You're worse than a woman.
Can we have a little break? Come on,
man. My man's bladder.
Take a look at a sneak peek of next week's episode of Kicking It with part 2 of Carly Lloyd.
How important was that relationship for you, the personal trainer relationship?
I always gave him so much credit, and I didn't give myself enough credit.
Right.
Because I was the woman in the arena.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me the tools, but I was the one going out and going to battle every day. And it just completely opened my eyes to a lot of things. You know, the control, the manipulation, the brainwashing, the driving a wedge through my family. All of these things that I didn't see or I didn't have the opportunity for life to slow down for me to see. And I saw it all. And so I was going back and back. And the person that you trust with your life, you think that someone that's in your life for that long is gonna do right by you. And it was the total opposite.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.